Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Today we're going to do a wrap-up of the election of this week on Tuesday. Voters in Ohio went out and soundly approved of Issue 1, Marcy's Law. If you've been listening to the program, you know that the Ohio Christian Alliance was urging a yes vote on Issue 1, the Victims' Rights Amendment that was on the fall ballot. And, of course, Ohioans went out and by a measure of 82%, overwhelmingly supported Issue 1. Issue 2 also was defeated. We were encouraging a no vote on Issue 2 because of the problems with Issue 2. We'll do another program on that as to how we're going to get a hold of drug costs here in Ohio going forward now that Issue 2 has been defeated by the Ohio voters and how the legislature could weigh in on that. But today we're going to focus on Issue 1. And with us on the phone is the honorary chairman of Issue 1, Marcy's Law, and that is Ohio's own Attorney General, Mike DeWine. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Chris, good to be back. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, and thank you for your position on Issue 1, Marcy's Law. When I was first approached by the committee to for our organization to consider it supporting it, we, of course, vetted it, and we asked attorneys, and we asked people in the know across the state, legal minds and everyday folks through the court systems, how they felt about this amendment on the fall ballot, Marcy's Law. And we got a lot of positive feedback. One judge told me, he said, I'm in for it. He's a former legislator, and he said, look, I want to be notified when certain individuals who I have put behind bars are released. And so it's all about notification. It's all about the balance of the victims getting some kind of rights. And, the opponents said, well, that's already in law. That's true to a point, but not always being carried out. We'll get into that in our conversation. But tell us what you think, first of all, about last night's victory.
Well, it was a big victory. As you saw, the margin was very large. And, you know, I think that was great. I think what the people of Ohio were saying is, look, victims have rights, and they should be enshrined in the Constitution. They are as important as other rights, and they're certainly as important as the rights that the accused have. We want the accused to have certain rights, but also victims need to have rights as well. And as you pointed out, it's notification. It's knowing when the case is going to grand jury, when it was going to the preliminary hearing, when the case is set for trial, it's having the opportunity to, to be consulted or at least have your say in regard to, a plea bargain that maybe the prosecutor is going to carry out. These are all things that I think most prosecutors are doing anyway and most judges are doing anyway. We've come a long, long way from when I was a county prosecuting attorney, and there really was not a victims' rights movement. This movement now has been going on for over 30 years and made some real, significant changes. In Ohio, for example, we have a victims' rights program where we take money and it goes to victim programming. So if someone has raped someone who's, had a traumatic experience, they have people who will help them get through that. And so I just look at this as kind of the next logical step of the victims' rights movement, and that is to enshrine it in the Ohio Constitution.
Well, of course, it has an Ohio tie. The good doctor that was funding the initiative here in Ohio, it was his sister, Marcy, who was killed a number of years ago by a disgruntled and former boyfriend that pursued her and ended up murdering her. But the family originally comes from Cincinnati, Ohio. Dr. Henry Nichols worked on getting this passed in California and other states, and I'm sure that last night was a great satisfaction for him as his home state, Ohio, passed overwhelmingly and concurred with supporting victims' rights. Your thoughts?
Well, I'm sure it was. And, you know, I just think it's a wonderful thing when someone takes a horrible tragedy that must cause them pain every single day and probably for the rest of their life and tries to make something positive out of that. There's nothing that can bring back your loved one, but, you know, doing something in her name, in this case, Marcy's name, I think is a lasting tribute, and it's an appropriate thing to do. And I'm sure he was very pleased with the wide margin, particularly of the vote last night.
You know, one of the commercials that was in support of Issue 1 was none other than Kelsey Grammer, the famed actor, and he talked about his dad's murder and his sister's murder, and so much heart, you know, pain for one family to endure so much, you know, tragedy, but then to not learn about his father's, the murder of his father, getting out of jail, and he said, I learned about it through the National Enquirer. He said, I thought it was a cruel joke until I found out it was real. You know, that was very compelling, I think. And, you know, a lot of people can relate to that, that, you know, the opponents of Issue 1 were saying, well, this is already in the laws. It's already in statute that the courts are to notify. But as a former prosecutor yourself, and of course now as Attorney General, you know, a lot of these courts around the state may or may not do their due diligence to notify the public and or those who would have interest in a trial, whether it be a parole hearing, sentencing, a parole hearing, or an early release of a perpetrator, and those who were victims of their crime would like to know. And I think that was a big push and initiative behind this Issue 1, Marcy's Law. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no doubt about that. Look, I mean, we got a lot of well-intended people in the criminal justice system who work hard every day, but having this as a part of the Ohio Constitution just alerts everybody and says to everybody, look, this is important. And so, you know, by putting it in the Constitution, you say that something's important. The people of the state of Ohio said it's not just a law. It is so important we want to put it in the Constitution. And, you know, we have an imperfect system, and we have imperfect people. And sometimes, you know, people are not getting notified. I mean, it does happen. So this really says, look, this is important. And it's going to put everybody on notice, I think, again. Look, you got to pay attention to this. This is important. And what has happened, Chris, is, you know, historically, a victim, let's say a woman is raped, you know, she is not a party to the case. In other words, it's the state of Ohio versus William Smith or whatever the guy's name is. It is not
right.
The victim versus. And so the victim technically, you know, is not a party. I mean, they're not, they didn't bring the suit. It's the state that did it. But, you know, tell a victim that this is not her case. I mean, it is her case. You know, she's the one who suffered. She's the one who's had to go through the agony. And so what this is recognizing really is that person, that victim, is a part of this case. We cannot ignore them. We should not ignore them. We must make sure that they feel a part of this case, that if something is going on that's important in the case, that she be notified or he be notified, because they were the ones who got beat up, or they were the ones who had their money stolen, or they were the ones who had, you know, who were raped. So it just recognizes, hey, victims are important. Victims are very important. We need to take care of them. We need to understand their trauma, and we need to do everything we can to alleviate that or to not inflict more trauma by a heartless system or what might seem as a heartless system that doesn't pay enough attention to the victim.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about Issue 1 that passed on Tuesday overwhelmingly by Ohio voters by a margin of 82%. Ohioans resoundingly gave approval to Issue 1, Marcy's Law, which is Victims' Rights Amendment to the Ohio Constitution. With us on the phone is Attorney General Mike DeWine, who was also honorary co-chairman of the committee. Mike, as I'm looking over the various provisions of Marcy's Law, Issue 1 now, which is law, the right to be treated with courtesy, fairness, and respect for their dignity and privacy throughout the criminal justice proceedings, talking about victims. Number two, the right to receive information about their rights and services available to crime victims. Number three, the right to receive timely notification of proceedings and other major developments in their case. The right to receive timely notification of charges to the offender's custodial status. That's a key one. Number five, the right to be present at court proceedings and provide input to a prosecutor before the plea deal is finalized. Now, the ACLU was opposed to this, and their spokesman last night, Gary Daniels, was talking about to media personnel that this could interfere with trials. That's not really true. I thought that was, disingenuous for him to talk about that, because that's not exactly what this does it?
Look, I had heard that ACLU had some problems with it. I just don't understand it. I mean, and this is nothing more than common courtesy. This is nothing more than, you know, giving the victim his or her due, and it's not going to interfere in the court proceeding. It's not going to slow the court proceeding down. So I really am kind of lost to understand what the ACLU finds to be so abhorrent in giving victims rights and taking care of victims.
Right. This is what he says last night in his statement after it passed. As Daniel says, he is worried about the provision that makes it harder for the accused to get evidence from crime victims through the legal process known as discovery. What is he talking about?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, it used to be years and years ago that a prosecutor could hide evidence from the accused and you know, only put that evidence out at trial. Those days are gone. They've been gone for a long time, as they should. I mean, most prosecutors today, it's pretty much an open file. Here's what our evidence is.
Right.
So I don't really understand, you know, anything about hiding evidence. I really don't know what, you know, what they're talking about.
Well, that's why I'm saying it's disingenuous, because as I read this, the constitutional amendment, it doesn't talk about any of that. It's actually after the trial, after the person has been convicted, not during the proceedings of the trial that would interfere with the defendant's reasonable defense. This is talking about after there's been a conviction, then the victim is party to or invited to, and again, what is already, yes, an existing statute law, but not always being practiced or carried through as far as notifications. We're talking about for a plea bargain deal, that the victims be notified of these proceedings, of the sentencing phase, of the parole hearings. These are the things that those who are victims who want to know what the status is, the custodial status of a convicted felon or a perpetrator, that they would know when they're going to be released, so that they can, let's take a look at the recent shooting in Texas. Here was someone who was jailed, and as soon as he got out, he exacted retribution to his in-laws. That's who attended the church in Texas. He was a crazed individual. He had an intent. And this is, you know, so this comes to mind when you think about why people need to be notified. He was already had a mental, health issue history. He obviously had violent tendencies, but because the Air Force did not make that known to the court system, he was able to acquire a firearm. And then, of course, this heinous act last Sunday with a shooting in Texas at the church in Texas. So,
I mean, Chris,
again, notification is so important.
It is. And just as an aside, I've spent a lot of my career working on what we call criminal justice databases, so that if someone has something, they get convicted of a felony in Oklahoma, that in Ohio, if that person shows up in Ohio and gets arrested again, and the police officer, and that, you know, that information will come up. What happened in this horrible, horrible tragedy in Texas is, you know, the Air Force really messed up. I mean, this guy was convicted of domestic violence. He hit his 18 18-month-old, I guess, stepson, and you know, luckily didn't kill him. So that information, for some reason, never got into the database. If it would have got into the database, you know, he would not have been allowed to buy, you know, the guns that he bought. He lied on his application, but you still should be able to catch him when you do a check. But you know, it's just outrageous, and I have not heard a good answer why that information didn't go into the database. I mean, it's your system is only as good as you know what is being put in it and the people who are putting in it information.
Well, that's right, and it would have his convictions would have come up, and his mental health illness history would have come up. And then he wouldn't have been able to acquire that firearm. This could have prevented it. Also, he was early released. And again, the people back in Texas were not aware of that. And, you know, again, this tragedy could have been averted. So,
well, I mean,
that's an example.
The person you see on the street, you know, let's imagine if you know, your wife has been raped, or imagine if your sister's been killed, and that person is sent to prison, you know, don't you want to know that he's been sent, first of all? And don't you want to know if he's up for parole? Don't you want to know if there's a chance he might get out? And then if he does get out, don't you think you have a right to be notified immediately? Absolutely. I mean, just
yes.
Absolutely. So it's just, I don't know what the ACLU is thinking about. I guess we'll know. They'll probably file some lawsuit. But look, the voters of the state of Ohio have spoken. They've spoken very loudly by a very big margin that this needs to be part of our Constitution, and it's going into our Constitution where it belongs.
Again, we're talking with State Attorney General Mike DeWine. Mike, as you were honorary co-chair then, and also as our Attorney General, when will it actually then come into effect? What's the timetable now that the voters approved?
Yeah, you know, I should know that, but I do not know that. I don't know exactly what it will be.
I know it's a little different in the timetable of when law is passed by the Ohio legislature and signed by the governor as to whether it then is passed by the Ohio voters. Is it a 30-day period? We'll have to look into that. I forgot myself. But obviously this is going to come into law and practice. I think it sends a very affirming message to the court systems that victims have rights. That those rights ought to be recognized and followed through. So do you expect there to be a good response from the various county courts across the state in response to Marcy's Law?
Yeah, absolutely. I think people who work in the criminal justice system, by and large, really understand victims. They understand, you know, how important they are and how important it is that we try to protect them and we try to help them. So, you know, the criminal justice system is made up of good people who try every single day. This just kind of puts it up on a big billboard and a flashing light and says, hey, don't forget, you know, it's here. It's in the Constitution. And so I think it will make a difference. You know, it will over time, I think, have a big impact. And the impact is going to be that, you know, people will be less likely, I think, just sometimes inadvertently maybe, to forget the victim. And this says loud and clear, hey, victims are important.
Well, that's right. One of the provisions is the right of restitution. Obviously, that's already in the law to some extent as to what sentencing phase is, what the court might order. The court may then order some restitution. Explain to our audience how that might work out then.
Restitution is usually ordered. Let's say that someone breaks into your house and they steal money. You know, as part of that order, the person is supposed to pay that back. Now, the truth is, if that person is sentenced to prison, you know, it's many times unlikely you're going to get your money, and that's just, you know, part of the problem. Now, the other thing you can do, and I'll put this plug in here now, but you can call the Attorney General's office, and, you know, if there's been no reimbursement for damages that you have suffered, let's say you're beaten up, and there's a hospital bill and you don't have insurance, you know, the state can pay for at least part of that. So We also have situations where, you know, if someone is murdered, but the state can, if there's no coverage there, no other way to pay for it, the state can pay for that as well. So there are certain things to what we call the victim compensation program that, you know, your listeners should certainly be aware of.
Now, is that through your website then, the Attorney General's website?
Yeah, they can go up OhioAttorneyGeneral.gov and pull that information down. And I would say that, you know, there's a lot up on that webpage, and there's a lot of interesting things. You can see, for example, sex offenders who are not in compliance, sex offenders who are not filing, you know, notification of where they are living. You can find wanted people. You can also look up at some unsolved homicides. So there's, you know, a whole bunch of things that are up on the webpage. You can also see the 12-point plan I put out last week in regard to how I think we should deal with the opiate epidemic and opiate problem. So a lot on there, a lot of good information. Just encourage people to take a look.
Absolutely. And, well, we so appreciate your support of Issue 1. And obviously, many people across Ohio concurred and gave it a resounding victory last night. And, you know, when the voters of Ohio get an opportunity to decide on an issue, they pretty much know what they want to do. They listen to both sides. But by and large, I believe in the initiative petition process, the constitutional amendment process. I'm glad that we have it here in Ohio. I know at times it seems like it's for sale by a certain special interest. But the Ohio voter, for the most part, is able to smoke that out as well and realize that and turn it back. I think that was the case in Issue 2, by the way. Not that they don't want to see prices on drugs come down, obviously, for our seniors and for those who are in need of prescription drugs, but for medications. But they think there's a better way forward. So, again, I applaud the Ohio voter for being an informed voter. That's what we do at the Ohio Christian Alliance, is provide educational resources. And then, of course, to help people to understand those issues. Appreciate all that you've done, Mike. You're in your seventh year as our Attorney General in your second term. And, of course, we're going to be having you back on the program to talk about the opiate epidemic here in Ohio. And I know that our Lieutenant Governor is telling a personal story right now, that how it has touched her family with her sons being addicted to opiates, and she's being very transparent about that. I think that's helpful for the public to see that it can happen in any family, but that there is hope and there is answers. Your thoughts?
Well, I applaud her courage for, you know, coming forward and talking about, which is an immensely personal challenge that her family has faced. You know, thank God, the last time I talked to her, she said that Both children were in recovery. So that's a great thing.
Yes. Well, Mike, thanks for being our guest today. We'll have you back, and we want to commend you for the work you're doing as our Attorney General. You make us proud. We thank you for all your work, sir. Thank you so much.
Hey, Chris, thanks. Good to be with you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. That's Attorney General Mike DeWine. Again, if you've missed any of our program today, you can go to our website at ohioca.org and catch the entire interview. And stay tuned. We'll have more. Thanks for listening today. God bless.
Looking out for seniors today. It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. This week at the Ohio State House, the Government Accountability and Oversight Committee passed out of committee HCR 10. Those of you that are regular listeners to this program understand that that is a resolution to support the State of Israel and to condemn anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. Well, let me read for you the press release that the Ohio Christian Alliance sent out this week. Today, members of the Ohio legislature took a positive step forward, pushing back against anti-Semitism by passing out of committee HCR 10, the resolution to condemn the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement against Israel, and to condemn increasing incidents of anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses. You know, unfortunately, there have been incidents of anti-Semitism that have continued on Ohio college campuses. And, of course, most recently in Athens, Ohio, at Ohio University. Actually, on the eve of the most holy day on the Jewish calendar, Yom Kippur, Nazi swastikas were drawn on the dormitories and on the sidewalks surrounding the campus. Officials at the university told Representative Andy Thompson that they were investigating the incident, and it is for these reasons that we strongly support HCR 10 and its passage today out of committee, and we're told that sometime in the next few weeks it will be on the House floor for a full vote and consideration. So call your state representative and urge them to support HCR 10, the resolution that supports the State of Israel and condemns anti-Semitism on Ohio college campuses, and we thank you for doing that. You can also learn more at our website at ohioca.org. Well, this week, of course, we celebrate the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, in which Martin Luther nailed the 95 theses on the Wittenberg door. And this, of course, was symbolic of the launch of the Reformation. And this week, our good friend Bill Fetter of the American Minute, he actually put out a couple of emails in his American Minute daily to talk about John Adams and his reference in the American Revolution with the Reformation, and, of course, Martin Luther himself. Bill, welcome to the program.
Chris, great to be with you.
Well, thanks for joining us today, and I really enjoyed your piece on John Adams. In fact, we resent that to our entire state list. I thought that it was so well written and documented of what you spelled out as far as his view of law and morality. Talk to our listeners about that.
Well, the Reformation was a turning point. A little background. the Muslims were invading Greece and destroying museums and libraries and churches and graves and artwork. And so the Greek scholars were fleeing to Florence, Italy, with all their Greek stuff, including their Greek New Testaments. And so this was called the Renaissance, where Western Europe is rediscovering Greek stuff. But they began to translate the Bible, not just to Latin, but all the way back to Greek. And so Erasmus was the first one to print an entire New Testament from the Greek. And Erasmus was a friend of Martin Luther. And so as they're getting this new interest in original words in the Greek, it laid the foundation for the Reformation. So on October 31st of 1517, Martin Luther nails his 95 debate questions on the door of the Wittenberg Church. That was sort of the bulletin board for the community. And the Reformation starts. Well, he's called to a trial called the Diet of Worms. That would make anybody have indigestion. But the Holy Roman Emperor is Charles V of Spain. He's 21 years old. And he considered it an argument amongst monks. You got a whole lot of monks on one side and this one monk on the other. And so that's when Martin Luther was more or less declared outside of the law, and he was kidnapped. They thought he was going to die, but he was hidden in the Wartburg Castle by Frederick of Saxony there. And then we see he translates the Bible from the Greek and Latin all the way into the German language. That's the Hochdeutsch dialect as the official language, dialect for Germany. This begins this Reformation. Now, Charles V, as the years go on, he realizes this is serious, but then the Muslims pick up and they conquer, attack Malta in the Mediterranean. They do the Battle of Lepanto. They're conquering. And so Charles V strikes a deal with the Protestants in the year 1555, and the Treaty of Augsburg lets every king decide what's going to be believed in his kingdom. And so he probably thought it was just going to be Catholics and Lutherans. But in the next century, it breaks into this domino effect of Europe where different kings believe different things. And if you didn't believe the way your king did, you fled. Theologically, Martin Luther's movement of focusing back on an individual's reading of the scripture sort of cut out the clergy, and it sort of undermined a hierarchical system that had been in place in Europe, and eventually gave birth to the idea of citizens ruling without a king. I get into that in England a little bit more, but ultimately it came to the colonies. And so if this was this polarity change in the direction of government from a top-down church government, top-down king government, to a bottom-up government. So church-wise, it was called the congregational form of church government, where the congregation got to vote. And then when the pilgrims got blown off course, they were going to go to Jamestown. They were 500 miles off course, and the captain says, it's too dangerous, you're going to have to get off. And they say, well, we don't know who's going to be in charge. There's no king-appointed person on our boat. They do something unique. They apply their congregational church government to their government. It's called the Mayflower Compact, where it says, we, in the presence of God, covenant ourselves together to form a civil body politic, to enact laws that we think most meet, unto which we promise all due submission. It was revolutionary. The whole world was this divine right of kings. God gives the power to the king. He dispenses it through his appointed administrators. This is, a polarity change. It's a bottom up, where the people decide who their leaders are going to be and what their laws are going to be. And so this influenced the New England colonies, particularly Connecticut with Thomas Hooker. It's called the Constitution State. And then it influenced the Declaration, where it says government by the consent of the governed, influenced the Constitution, where it's we the people form this to have a more perfect union, right? And so John Adams is acknowledging the role of the Reformation in the founding of America. When they signed the Declaration of Independence, Sam Adams, who's considered the father of the Declaration, he said, this day, I trust, the reign of political Protestantism will commence. Over in England, there was statesman Edmund Burke, and he addresses Parliament in 1775. He says, all Protestantism is a sort of dissent, but the religion most prevalent in our northern colonies is the refinement on the principle of resistance. It is the dissidence of the dissent and the Protestantism of the Protestant religion. And so it's this idea that it's this bottom-up form of government from the church reformation now applied to the government system. And then John Adams writes about this in his dissertation on canon and feudal law. Canon law was the church law, and then the feudal was the government law in Europe. He said, desire of dominion becomes an encroaching, grasping, restless, and ungovernable power. Tyranny, cruelty, lust was soon adopted by most of all the princes of Europe. The people were held in ignorance till God, in his benign providence, raised up champions who began and conducted the Reformation. From the time of the Reformation of the first settlement of America, knowledge gradually spread in Europe, but especially in England. And in proportion as that increased and spread among the people, tyranny lost strength. So it's like a teeter-totter. As the people became more educated and taking more responsibility for the government, it pulled the power away from a top-down form of government with a king.
Well, in reading from your American Minute from this week, and John Adams was stated in his writings, liberty cannot be preserved without a general knowledge among the people who have a right to knowledge as their great creator, who does nothing in vain, has given them understanding and a desire to know. Rulers are more than trustees for the people, and if the trust is insidiously betrayed or wantonly trifled away, the people have a right to revoke the authority and to constitute abler and better trustees. This is from John Adams' writings in which you were talking about this week. So without question, Bill, the Reformation and the spirit of evangelism, had a very intertwined within our founding as an American republic.
Well, it is, and it's actually pretty simple. So if you can imagine a spectrum of power, one side is total government, the other side is no government. Total government, you get a king who rules by fear. No government is anarchy. No government unless the people have internal morals. It's like everybody downloads a behavioral app on their iPhone. Instead of telling them where to turn in their car, it tells them how to act every day. But wait a second. Why would you follow an internal moral? What would motivate you to restrain yourself from a selfish temptation? Ancient Israel introduced into the world the key ingredient. A God who is watching everyone, he wants you to be fair, and he is going to hold you accountable in the future. So you're about to steal, nobody's around, and then you think, God is watching me, he wants me to be fair, he's going to hold me accountable in the future. Maybe I should hesitate stealing. And it creates something in the back of your head called a conscience. If everybody in the country believes this, you can maintain complete order with no policeman following everybody around. Maximum liberty. Now, it only works with the God of the Bible. An Islamic Allah God says there's an infidel woman there, nobody's around, you can rape her, it's okay. The God of the Bible says do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So our form of government without a king depends on the people being educated and having morals, but what motivates them to follow those morals is this God of the Bible. It's the sunlight that it provides the solar energy for the plant of freedom to grow, is this consciousness of accountability to God.
Well, that's right. No wonder John Adams stated, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the governance of any other. You know, reading from your email this week again, Adams stated in the dissertation on the canon of feudal law, let us study, he says, the great examples of Greece and Rome, the conduct of our British ancestors who have defended for us the inherent rights of mankind against foreign and domestic tyrants and usurpers, against arbitrary kings and cruel priests, in short, against the gates of earth and hell. Let the pulpit, he says, resound with the doctrines and sentiments of religious liberty. Your thoughts?
Well, he points out the pulpits resounding. And so they understood in America, the people are the king. And even the Pew Forum, P-E-W, Pew Forum, a few years ago did a poll. and identified that 70% of Americans identify themselves as Christian. Now, 20 years ago, it was 90%, but still 70% is a majority. And so if the majority of the people are the country's ruled by the people, the majority of the people are Christian, that means they go to church, which makes the pastors in America, in a sense, counselors to the king. And so you have two types of counselors. One tells the king to go to sleep, shirk his responsibility, close his eyes, just be irresponsible. Another set of counselors comes in and throws a bucket of ice water on his congregation and says, wake up. You don't just have the right to vote in America. You're going to be held accountable to God for what happens in America. You are the king. And so people say, well, I need somebody to tell me what to do. Since when does the king sit on his throne and say, can somebody tell me what I'm supposed to do here? Hey, butler, come here. What am I supposed to do? It's like, no, it's your job to hear from God, get educated on the issues, and you tell your representatives what needs to happen. And the shoe's on the other foot. The responsibility is on us, the people's shoulders. I used a little example. Imagine visiting a king in the Old Testament, and you're going through the streets of Jerusalem, and you're witnessing murder, rape, and crime. You finally get into the king's chamber, and he looks up all worried at you, and he says, did you see all that crime coming in here? I wish somebody would fix it. And you reach over and tap the king on the shoulder and say, excuse me, you're the king. You're the one that's supposed to fix it. That's like somebody in America watching TV, seeing all the terrible stuff going on, saying, I wish somebody would fix it. Hello, reach through the TV tube and tap you on the shoulder. You're the king. You're the one accountable to God to fix this mess.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue.
You're listening to News in Focus, a broadcast of the Ohio Christian Alliance. With us on the phone is author and historian Bill Fetter. In fact, Bill will be leading our tour of the Return to Plymouth. In just 3 years, it will be the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrims Landing at Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts. And later this summer in 2018, the Ohio Christian Alliance will be sponsoring a tour to Plymouth Rock and also Freedom Trail in Boston, Massachusetts. If you'd like more information, you can go to our website at Ohio Christian Alliance or ohioca.org. You can just click on the contact information. Let us know that you're interested in joining us. We'll be taking a charter bus from Ohio to Plymouth, and we'll have reservations there. We'll give you all the information, but Bill Fetter will be helping us lead the tour, and we're going to have a great time really returning to Plymouth Rock and also walking Freedom Trail in Boston, Mass. Bill, again, continuing with this week and celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation and Martin Luther. And, of course, there were so many great church reformers. I was listening to Pastor Erwin Lutzer of Moody Broadcasting, who was talking about the great church reformers of John Knox and John Huss, and so many who actually gave their lives, John Wycliffe, who gave their lives for the truth of the gospel and for the liberty in Christ. And I love what you put together this week of how it had such a bearing on our nation's founding and with John Adams himself, who was a committed Christian and dedicated to the scriptures as well. Go on with your thoughts.
Well, there's an interesting study done by a Robert Woodbury, and he compared the countries where missionaries went to in the 19th century and how those countries were in the 20th century regarding prosperity and freedom. And he found a direct connection between where what he called conversionary Protestant missionaries went to. They educated the common people to read and to read the Bible. And when you read the Bible, you see these parables where Jesus tells the unjust guy, because he buried his talent rather than working to multiply it, and talks about being honest and so forth. And so it caused there to be a literate populace. Those countries rose and today have more freedom and more prosperity. So some missionaries, what he called Protestant conversionary missionaries, wanted to educate the populace, but other missionaries just wanted to educate the upper class, and it caused there to be a the same social pyramid, social structure in place. So they went from worshiping their pagan gods, but it was hierarchical, to now they're Christian, but it's still hierarchical. But so the concept that the Reformation causes the people to be able to read the Bible in their own language, that is a statistically documented phenomenon, that where the Protestant missionaries went to, they educated everyone to read, and those countries today are more prosperous. So again, it's this idea that the Reformation gave birth to the individual being personally responsible to God.
Well, that's right, and it was John Wycliffe who basically was putting the Bible in the common people's hands. And they were going around the countryside and passing out New Testaments. Of course, the Catholic Church persecuted him for it and were trying to corral him. But he continued by dispersing the Word of God as far as he could during his lifetime.
Right. It's interesting when you study the English Bible. Wycliffe in the 1300s, it was all hand copied, because they had not invented the printing press yet, right? Gutenberg was 1450 when he invented. And so every single copy of Wycliffe's New Testament was hand-copied. Imagine that. And so when he was persecuted, they would round up those copies and burn them. John Huss did a similar thing in Prague when he translated scriptures into the Czech language. But once Luther comes along, his writings now can be mass-printed. It's sort of like he's taken advantage of a Twitter account. Instead of funneling stuff through the controlled media, he's immediately communicating with the people. Everybody gets to read the scriptures, and it undermined the social structure that all these elites had in place for a millennium.
Well, it's so hard for people to understand today, because we have so much access to libraries, to online knowledge. Someone just has to do a search engine for any kind of topic, and it comes up instantly on their cell phone, their tablet, their desktop computer. But, you know, back in the times in which we're talking, only the literate and educated were able to have access even to writings. You know, reading the autobiography of Benjamin Franklin this summer, every book he could get his hands on, he would borrow books. And, of course, he thought that for our nation to be a nation born in that knowledge and freedom, it needed a library system. So he began actually a library exchange in Greater Boston. So, you know, you can see where these things were developed, of where knowledge was expounded upon and in the pursuit of knowledge. And, the Bible says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. And so, you know, there's great freedom and liberty in Christ, and the Lord wants us to know things, but there were those who were trying to keep the people under by keeping information from them. Your thoughts?
Well, you're exactly right. You know, I wanted to pick up with the storyline. After Martin Luther, you have 100,000 Muslims surrounding Vienna, Austria. And we begin to see that as the Muslims are encroaching on Western civilization, it moves further to the West. And they, again had the Battle of Lepanto, the largest battle ever on the Mediterranean Sea. And Spain was using the gold from the New World to fight the Muslims, which is a good thing, right? It saved Western Europe.
In fact, wasn't it Martin Luther that called for prayer for Europe because the Muslim threat of this this armada that was about to land in southern Europe was threatening to overrun Europe, and Martin Luther called for the church to pray. Is that not right?
He did, and as also John Calvin did the same thing. But then after they stopped the Muslims at the Battle of Lepanto, 1571, rather than freeing the rest of the Mediterranean from Muslim control, Spain decided to take its invincible armada and squash the Reformation in England. And then they sent their what's called Spanish Furies. They sent the Iron Duke, the Duke of Alba, who just had his men rape and pillage all throughout Holland. Took an 80-year war of independence for Holland to get free of Spain. But it was the Queen Elizabeth who was there in England, and she has her Sir Walter Raleigh and Sir Francis Drake, and she gives her famous speech in 1588. I know I'm just a woman, but she said, I have the heart and stomach of a king, and a king of England too, and I'll not let any king of Spain or European monarch invade my realm. And anyway, they stop the Spanish, and that's when the Spanish Armada is smashed in a hurricane and opens up the rest of America to colonization by the Europeans and particularly the English.
We've come to the end of our program. Listen, Bill, thank you so much. It's so awesome that we could spend so much time with you. Give your website again for folks to visit, the American Minute.
Thank you, Chris. My website's AmericanMinute.com.
Thanks, Bill, for being on the program, and we'll be talking to you soon. And then again, folks, if you'd like to join us on our trip, Return to Plymouth with Bill Fetter, we'll have more information and details of how you can register for that in the summer of 2018. We hope that you can join us. God bless. You've been listening to the Ohio Christian Alliance broadcast, News in Focus. We'll catch you next time. God bless.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.